Sean.
If I asked you who you are,
what's the first thing that comes to mind?
I'm a basketball coach.
And if that's stripped away?
Well, I'm also a history teacher.
Okay. We take that away. Who are you?
Well, I'm a husband, I'm a father.
And God forbid that should ever change. But if it does, who are you?
I don't understand this game.
It's not a game, man. Who are you?
I'm a white American male.
Yeah, that's for sure. Is there anything else?
Well, I'm a Christian.
And what's that mean?
It means follower of Christ.
And how important is that?
It's very important.
Interesting. All right, so far down your list.
Okay, wait a minute. I could have easily said Christian first.
Yeah, but you didn't.
Look, John. Your identity will be tied to whatever you give your heart to. Doesn't sound like the Lord asked first place.
You're calling me a bad Christian?
Let me be a little direct.
Last time you were here, you said you'd pray for me. Did you?
No.
No. For someone who knows the Lord, you're acting like somebody who doesn't, which makes me wonder. What have you allowed to define you? When you lost your team, it didn't just disappoint you, it devastated you. Something or someone will have first place in your heart. But when you find your identity in the one who created you, it'll change your whole perspective.
Who are you? How would you answer that question? You just heard a clip from the movie Overcomer. It's a Christian drama film that tells the story of a high school basketball coach who loses his team due to a job crisis in their town. Now, whether you identify as a Christian or not, I think every coach in the world can relate in some way to this question, because we're all facing the possibility that we may not be coaching this season due to the pandemic. And that's a very scary reality for us, because as John's mentor says, your identity will be tied to whatever you give your heart to. And many of us, we put our heart and soul into coaching, oftentimes at the expense of other priorities in our life, our children, our spouses, our values, even our faith. Thus, I think it's very timely for the second part of our conversation with Indiana Wesleyan basketball coach and three-time national champion, Greg Tonegal. The identity of the Indiana Wesleyan culture is built on I am third, which stands for God first, others second, and yourself third. How do you build this type of culture, though? Well, Greg Tonegal shares today on the podcast how it all starts with himself. Where he finds his identity is a daily battle. And to maintain the right perspective and heart, he has to be very, very intentional in today's world. Welcome to the Coaching Culture Podcast, brought to you by Thrive on Challenge. I'm JP Nurbin, joined by my friend and co-host Nate Sanderson. Each week in about 30 minutes, we discuss important principles and strategies of transformational leadership. At Thrive on Challenge, we help coaches to raise the standards and strengthen the relationships in their program, because we know this type of culture produces better leaders, better people, and better results. To learn more about how we can help you, go to thriveonchallenge.com, where you can also subscribe to our weekly newsletter and get the coaching notes to every episode of this podcast. You're listening to episode 150, Creating the I Am Third Culture, with Coach Greg Tonegal. Now, this is the second part of our conversation with Coach Tunigal, so if you missed episode 149, be sure to check it out. Now, I want to circle back to one other thing that you mentioned maybe 5 minutes ago, which was you were winning a lot of games that are close games, right? That really stuck with me because it comes back to something I remember hearing you share on Jamie Beckler's podcast around fear. And you talked about how early on you used fear as a motivator. How did you used to bring fear into your program? What did that look like? And then how did you take it out of your program?
I think for me, as you alluded to, fear my whole life was the great motivator. That's how I motivated myself. And it can get you results. Don't get me wrong. I feared failure growing up. And so what that did was just made me play harder, made me practice more, made me get up before anybody else because I didn't want anybody else being better than me. The problem with that, as I found, it led to burnout. And then when I got into coaching, it led to using my players as a commodity because they were there to help me win. And it wasn't until 2014 when I stumbled across the idea that what if fear wasn't the great motivator, but was the great paralyzer? I'll give you an example, a visual. I used to see fear as like the bread pan, meaning coaching was used to constrain and to put walls up around my players because after all, they needed discipline. They needed me to rein them in. But it soon became apparent that what if I saw my coaching and fearless as the yeast? If I just put it in there, what would it do to my team's potential? How could it make my players rise to another level? And that's what we've seen over the last 6 years is we've just gone to another level because we've been coaching with this philosophy of what does it mean to take fear out rather than put it in.
I think sometimes we have a hard time understanding as coaches, you know, we think that we're using our passion to inspire them, but we really are using fear to motivate them or to drive them. When you look back at yourself as a coach, or you look at, let's say you go, I'm sure you go to a lot of tournaments and you're watching players and recruiting. What are some of the common behaviors that you see on the sideline of that coaching, that coach is operating from a place of fear, not love?
Well, I just think so many, if we really pay attention to our hearts and we begin to look at our behaviors, so many of the decisions we make as coaches are far more about are being shaped by fear than they are vision. So, for instance, I saw myself as a young coach, you know, leading up to a big game, overcoaching and underleading, telling my team how great this team is, telling my team if we don't have the perfect practice, we're going to get blown out, painting this picture that basically we don't have a chance. When in reality, all I was doing was reining in the potential of my team. And sometimes that led to anger outbursts. Sometimes that led to frustration. Sometimes it was as simple as it led to a scout that was way too big and way too much information that my players could digest. Because I know this now. Fear can't occupy a player's mind at the same time freedom does. There's always going to be a give or take between fear and freedom. And if we want our players to play their best, basketball is a game of rhythm. It's a game of timing. It needs to be played in freedom. So if my players are constantly thinking, what does coach want me to do? What shot does coach want me to take? What does coach want me to do now? They can't play in freedom. They're slow. We've talked about this before, but you know, the faster your mind moves, the slower your feet move. Well, that's part of being fearless is as I overcoach, I'm actually slowing my players down. So learning to simplify things, you know, you don't have to get all philosophical with your team, but you can just say, okay, I'm going to dumb things down. Instead of them memorizing 50 things on this scout, I'm going to give them the 5 most important. And I think you'd be surprised as your players grasp that, how much faster they can play. That was one of the other things. As we've gone fearless, our tempo's increased, our scoring's increased, our assist has increased. And it's not because we're doing different drills per se. It's because we've removed things from their mind and we've let them be instinctual. We've let them play out of instinct. You take a great player and you let him play out of instinct, he's far greater than you telling him and scripting him what to do. I mean, that's common sense. But for some reason in coaching, maybe it's because we're control freaks. I mean, I'm a control freak to some degree. We feel like we need to control every aspect of the game. But in reality, I think what we're doing is just slowing our players down.
So, Greg, I'm interested, you know, we've talked about this in terms of relationships and program identity and how you built this into your DNA. But when it comes to practice, you know, what does I am third and being fearless look like in your practices? Because I would assume there, that's where the incubation really happens, right? So what does that look like for your team?
I'll give you kind of a practical example. So offensively, we would say we would drill two concepts into our guys' minds. So we're going to be far more mentality than we are scheme. So if you said, hey, how do you guys play? I can't give you a set play, or I can't really give you a patterned offense we run, because every year that's going to change. But hopefully every year the mentalities we ingrain and we teach are going to be the same. So there's two things we want you thinking about offensively. The first is to catch fearlessly. The second is to create for a teammate. Now, if you think hard about those two concepts, they really embody I am third and fearless. So what we mean by catch fearlessly is we're going to have you catch the basketball in a way that's very aggressive, in a way that's downhill, a way that puts the defense on its heels. But then as you catch the ball, we're going to ingrain a mentality into you that your job is to create for your teammates. Because at the end of the day, everybody's taught from a young age, when you catch the ball, you think score. The problem is there's only one basketball. There's four other guys. What do they do when you're thinking score? But if we can create a mentality that my job is to create for somebody else, it's not that I lose and they gain, because the other four guys are doing the same thing. They're trying to create for me. And if I've had that trust that we've talked about has been built, ball moves, the ball's shared, and I think we have an offense that has greater potential. So within our drills, we're going to then try to drill those mentalities. We're going to try to maybe manipulate some different drills and some schemes that position our guys to do those things very well.
I think you've got this incredible identity that you're really preaching and driving home. You've got these incredible experiences and stuff off the court. But as we know as coaches, we're going to get into those practices, and I am third is not going to be present. And sometimes that is the effort is going to drop and people are going to be putting themselves first and the fact that they're tired, right? That would be a common challenge for many coaches. So when you start to see that I am third, that start to slip, that culture start to slip, let's just say in effort and within practice, what's one way that you address that?
Yeah, and I don't want people to get the idea, hey, because we've got this I am third culture. We love God. We love other people. We're just having a hunky-dory time, and I'm an easy coach. I think they'd tell you anything but that. I'm very demanding. I have a high level of expectations, but I think it's going to be balanced, hopefully, with some of the things that we've talked about. So there are those moments where we're not headed in the right direction, or I don't like our mentality, or selfishness kicks in. I mean, I've got this radar now that's developed over the years. I call it the me first radar, man. As soon as that starts dinging, you've kind of flipped a switch in me that I'm not very happy. But one of the things I've noticed within our culture, our leaders, especially our seniors, often will take care of stuff before it gets to me. It makes me so thankful that I'm not constantly putting out fires, because our older guys understand the culture. They know what we're looking for. So they're able to first go to somebody and say, hey, this is not who we are. If that's not taken care of, you know, then I've got to step in. I'm hopefully going to address the heart more than behavior. Because one thing I've learned having kids is that whatever modifies behavior trains the heart. Behaviors are an outflow of the heart. So if all you do is modify behaviors, all you're doing is putting Band-Aid, you know, on the symptom. But if you talk to the heart, you've got what controls that entire person. So once again, it kind of fits into what we're trying to do as a program. If your heart's in the right place, meaning you're pursuing God first and others second, you got a better chance of helping you redirect your behaviors than if all I'm doing is worrying about behavior modification. I mean, I think nobody wants to get into coaching for behavior modification. I mean, that's not fun. But if we're in there and we're redirecting hearts and we have some depth to our relationships, those are those hard but fun moments of coaching that I think we all enjoy.
So we will be back to the rest of our conversation with Greg in a second, but I want to take just a brief moment to tell you about the competitive cauldron. It's one of the most effective systems that we use to build a competitive culture. The competitive cauldron's a simple system that's going to help you to objectively track and rank your players' practice performance. The result is that players are more bought into their role and they are more competitive in practice. I've recently launched the Competitive Cauldron video training and spreadsheet at coachtube.com. Now, the training will help you to design and implement the cauldron within your program. The spreadsheet will help you to track each player's win percentage and rank throughout the season. You can save 10% off of it right now by using the coupon code CCPODCAST. There is a link in the episode details of this podcast you can also use to access the video. Coaches at the youth, collegiate, and professional level have made this a foundational part of their program. There's so many benefits. Don't miss out on this special opportunity. Now let's get back to the rest of our conversation with Greg.
Greg, I've been hosting a series of conversations with some coaches online during the pandemic here. And one of the common topics and questions is, how do you address player roles? You know, you bring people in, you encourage them to grow, you encourage them to compete. And yet at some point, you know, you have to figure out how the pieces fit together. And that can lead to some difficult conversations, some disappointed players, sometimes some disappointed parents. How do you guys, again, address just trying to be able to communicate through getting players to embrace their roles on your team?
I would say this would be the most difficult part of coaching, right? Or leadership in general, to take a group of people and say, I want to align you around a common vision and mission. There's probably no greater difficulty in leadership than that. And this isn't easy. This is an ongoing process. I think all coaches are going to struggle with this. But I think, once again, if you've got a bigger mission and vision involved than just basketball, I think you got a chance, or you got a little bit better chance. And so basketball is the byproduct, once again, of what we're trying to do. And to sort of constantly bring guys back and to see the big picture. Because here's the reality. If you're struggling on our team, what I would say is, if you're really struggling with selfishness now, what kind of husband are you going to be in 5 years from now? Well, nobody wants to be a bad husband. I mean, they're all, half of them are in love, and they think, you know, it's life's going to get so much easier, and they're going to marry the wife of their dreams. But to bring that back to reality and say, look, I just want you to learn to be unselfish now when it really doesn't matter, but someday it will matter. Like, you screw it up now, we'll lose a game, you'll miss a shot. We all can live with that. You screw this up 5-10 years from now, and there's going to be a lot of people that have to pay the consequence of that. So we're constantly trying to keep this bigger picture involved. You know, same thing about a young man who's going to hopefully step into a community someday and not take from his community, but give to his community. Well, if you can learn to give now, you'll learn to give later. And so I think we're shaping those roles by having a bigger and broader vision than just basketball, just playing time. Because at the end of the day, if it's only that, I'm not sure there is an answer to that. You're going to have anybody who's not getting those minutes is going to be really upset.
Absolutely love that. And Coach, I kind of want to circle back to where we started, which you talked a little bit about. As you grew as a coach, you realized you had to go first. You had to go first in this process of really growing yourself as a leader. So you've been in it 15 years now. Where do you see yourself needing to grow as a leader moving forward the most?
Well, the concept of learning to put God first and others second, you know, in Christian world, you'd say that's a daily death to self. It's learning to die to myself. I mean, that's what marriage is about. Every day you realize I have to put the needs of my wife before my own. And I wish I could say naturally I wake up and I run to that and I love that and I'm pursuing that. But I'm a prideful man at times. I've got an ego at times. Oftentimes my identity can be misplaced. I mean, I live in this world where my culture values performance and success to the highest degree. I'm wired to be successful. So how do I lean into how I'm wired and gifted without succumbing to a performance-based identity? Like, that is a daily battle for me. Now, it's one I think I'm learning to win and overcome, but for me, I have to be very intentional about how I pursue my faith. I have to be very intentional about where I'm finding my value and my success, because there is this struggle with, I don't want to become a losing coach. Like, I want to win, but I don't want my identity to be tied up into that. And so the only way I know how personally is I pursue God and I pursue other people every day, and I find that balance and I find that joy and I find that satisfaction. And it's allowed me to see coaching, I think, from a little bit different perspective.
And Greg, I'm curious, you mentioned earlier that you have 6 children of your own, and you're thankful to be on this podcast because it gives you a little refuge maybe during this crazy time here in the pandemic. But I think that's another common struggle for coaches, is trying to be able to balance home life and their marriage and their role as a father or a mother with all of the demands and requirements of building a program and being faithful to your players and that sort of thing. How have you been able to juggle those responsibilities as your family has grown throughout your career?
You know, I've got a good friend who's the CEO of a Fortune 100 company, and one of the most successful guys, you know, one of the brightest guys you'll ever meet. And he told me a long time ago, he said, you know, we don't have this. We've got this idea that I'm supposed to have a balance between work and family. But the reality is there's no balance. There's just priority. And you have to make a decision. What are your priorities? So it comes back to, that's what I think I Am Third is so important for our guys, that it helps them prioritize who they want to become. So for me, family is very important. And for sure, at this stage in my life, I'm not about to sacrifice my family to get some more wins. I remember when I won my second national championship. I've told this story many times. It's really true. The horn goes off, the confetti flies, ESPN comes out, and they hand me the trophy, and they tell me to hold it up. And as I'm looking around, it's almost like everything stopped and everything was slow motion. And I had this thought, like, this is it. And I thought about all the friends I had in coaching who had given up families, family time, who had maybe left relationships, who had sacrificed a lot to try to get to this point. And I thought, that's it. But then that feeling left me, and another feeling came where I saw our team over the journey of what had happened that entire year, specifically that morning when we got together and we were praying as a team and we were talking about the year. And I saw the value of the growth and the relationships we had. And I was like, that's it. That's what I want right there. It's not the trophy. I mean, the trophy's the end. It's the destination. But as you guys all know, it's the journey where we really find that satisfaction and that value. And so I think for me right now, I love having my family a part of this program. They're going to always come first. Program's going to come second. And I got to trust at the end of the day, that's good enough.
Do you mind sharing what maybe some of the, what that looks like of actually moments where you've had to put your family first and you've, and the program has come second?
Yeah. So, you know, I've got six kids. My assistant coach, Jeff Clark, has, they're about to have their fifth. We have an open door policy for kids. David Osborne's got a couple, which means kids are invited to practices, kids are invited on the bus, and you can imagine the chaos that ensues with that. I mean, we'll be in the middle of practice. Kids will be, you know, coming on the court, and is that a distraction? Yes. But how many games do we play where we don't have distractions? You know, one time a coach told me, he was asking me to consider joining his staff, and I asked him about kids, and he said, we don't welcome those distractions. And I thought, well, don't you, Brode? You know, what do you tell the opposing team to be quiet as you're shooting free throws? Like, that's just part of it. And so our kids are part of our family. They're a part of our program. I want our players to be involved. And at a place like Indiana Wesleyan, I can send my kids to the back of the bus, and I know they're going to be mentored. I know they're not going to hear things that they shouldn't. It's such a blessing to have the type of kids that we have and to be able to open them up to the program.
Coach, I really appreciate it. Is there anything else that you'd like to share as just some parting words?
Well, I love this conversation. It's really challenged me. You know, we've developed a website, iwhoops.net, and our whole goal was to put some things out there for coaches who, you know, maybe want to establish a similar culture or who want to know more about what does it mean to be I Am Third. You know, we're just kind of at that stage where giving away is more fulfilling than taking. And so anything we have, we are willing to give away. Any conversations people want to have, we're more than willing to have. Because we've taken and stole from a lot of people in this profession, and it's definitely time to be giving back.
Well, as we wrap up today's episode, a huge thanks to Coach Tonegal for taking time away from his six children during the lockdown back in May to record that episode. I guess we really should be thanking his wife, though. if you liked that Overcomer audio clip, I will have a link in the Coaching Notes PDF, which you can get those and every episode's Coaching Notes by subscribing to our weekly newsletter. And there's a link in the episode details, or you can go to thriveonchallenge.com. Also, be sure to go to iwuhoops.net and check out their I Am Third podcast. So many incredible, incredible things they are doing in their program.